everybody. We're GFBS. We're Grand Forks' best source on a Tuesday. From the Midwest Public Health Coalition, David Waterman and Dr. Dan Stanislawski back in the studios again today. Our scientific dystopia and COVID-19. As is every Tuesday, it's going to be an interesting one. Show today brought to you by First Community Credit Union. You've been dreaming about your forever home. Well, forever, right? Well, now's the time to make that dream a reality. Now's the time to contact Craig Vansky, mortgage loan officer with First Community Credit Union. You know, Craig can make your home buying dreams come true. With a low interest rates and quality service, First Community Credit Union can help you with all of your home buying needs. With rates still incredibly low, you know what? Now might be the perfect time. Make your forever home dream come true. Contact Craig Vansky at First Community Credit Union, 701-757-6805. Or email craig.vansky at myfccu.com. First Community Credit Union, equal housing opportunity. Phone number, by the way, if you want to text any questions or comments or even call, 701-213-0863, 701-213-0863. And before we get too far into the show, it is time for our daily segment called Jokes My Neighbor Tells Me. Here we go, Jokes My Neighbor Tells Me. What should we do with people who rely on government handouts but refuse to work? What should we do with people who rely on government handouts but refuse to work? Kick them out of Congress. And I didn't even mean that for all of our congressmen, but I think you get my picture. David Waterman, Dr. Dan Stanislawski, we'll go to you first. How are you, man?
I'm doing all right. You know, I didn't sleep too well last night. It was one of those where you wake up at like 1:30 in the morning after a good 4 hours of sleep and you're awake, you know, and your mind's trying to solve all the problems of the world and your body's like, shut up. Go to sleep.
Okay, my question is, how many problems of the world did you solve in your awakeness last night?
You know, according to myself, all of them.
Good. Oh, that's worth one of these.
But in reality, yeah, none of them.
Okay. All right. Well, at least you gave it an effort, right?
Yeah, that's
all
right. That's
David
right.
Waterman, how are you?
Good morning, sir. I'm fine, thank you. I have that experience more often than I care to admit. Yeah. And sometimes I just say, you know what, I'm just going to get up and write some stuff down. And an hour and a half, 2 hours later, I stop and go back to bed.
Are you like the famous songwriters? They keep a notepad by them and they wake up in the middle of the night and write down song lyrics? Do you do that?
Yes, except that I don't write song lyrics. Mm-hmm. And my notepad is usually not, it's usually not by my bed, even though it's supposed to be. So what I did for a while is I had 3 by 5 index cards. Mm-hmm. And those were great, except that if I do it without a light on, then in the morning I spend a lot of time deciphering what I wrote in the dark. And then if I turn a light on, then I could wake up my wife. So now I just get up and go down to my office.
You know, we kind of all have a lot in common. I do that. I'll wake up in the middle of the night with a great idea for a show or something and then think, okay, I won't forget it. And then the 80s comes back to haunt me, and I forgot it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I didn't do all that stuff in the 80s, though, John. So I wrote, I think, five or six pages the other day, between 3 and 4:30 in the morning. And when I got up, when I woke up at 6:30 or 7, I thought, what did I write? I couldn't even remember until I read the whole thing. I thought, I'm glad I wrote that down.
Yeah. Did you guys have a good Independence Day weekend?
Yes, absolutely, sir. Yeah. Spent it with a family in Minnesota, a lot, large get-together. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun. I haven't seen a lot of people for a long time for some reason. I don't know why, but it was great to see everyone.
Good, good. And how about you?
Yes, it was very relaxing. Yeah. We went out. We were going to go buy some fireworks and shoot them off, and then we decided my son decided, I don't really want to do that. So we just went out and went out by Stone's Mobile Radio, parked the truck, and walked out and just laid down in the grass and watched them. And it was great. It was a great
show. I happened
to
be in Tower, Minnesota on the 4th of July. Actually, it was the Saturday of the 4th. And I tried to get through the town at the wrong time of the day because it was when they had their 4th of July parade. And that little, teeny, little town of Tower, Minnesota, there had to have been at least 1,000 cars there. The streets were lined up on both sides of the streets, at least 10 people deep. And I tell you what, the people up in the Iron Range, I think they've been sick and tired of not having the gatherings or the gatherings because it was a lot of fun. But yeah. Glad everybody had a good Fourth. I'm glad all of Thank us you. Have our fingers still on attached. You know, all that goes.
It's still there.
Right. 9 new cases of COVID in North Dakota yesterday, none in Grand Forks County. A couple of numbers here. 55%, almost 55% of the U.S. has been vaccinated at least one shot. 47.4% are totally vaccinated. If you saw the news or heard the news this morning, Canada finally starting to ease restrictions just a little bit. But one that caught my eye was that 13-year-old Michigan boy. And I can't remember if we talked about this or if this just happened recently. Died within 3 days after receiving his second COVID vaccine. Mm-hmm. Now 5,718 deaths from the vaccine. Those are the verified ones. But my question is, what the heck's a 13-year-old boy? Why do they even want to get vaccinated? Or did he not want to and he got forced to?
And what were his parents thinking at the time, or what are they thinking now?
Yeah,
I'm guessing that what they're thinking now is not the same thing as what they were thinking when they said, yeah, I sure. think that's a good idea. Go ahead and get that.
Yeah. Oops. Okay.
I don't think any 13-year-old has any form of giving consent.
No.
I think you need an adult to sign off on that.
No.
Now, I just want to interrupt for a second because remember when we were first sitting around here and he said, don't wear green?
Yes.
Yeah. Look what he looks like.
Yes. This is blue.
Look at that. You're kind of vanishing a little bit.
You're almost turning invisible.
Paul's not really.
I got another shirt.
He's not all.
I'll do a wardrobe change.
He's not all here this morning.
Yeah. You think about people that had it harder in the 80s than I did, and they're looking at that going, wow, what's going on? all right. Our scientific dystopia and COVID-19. Explain the title, if you would,
sure,
Dr. Dan.
And maybe this would make a good Icky Ichabod's episode as well, which I watched, by the way, and I thought it was great.
Okay.
I don't think I'll ever watch any of the movies he's talking about.
Yeah.
But his episodes are very entertaining, you know? Weird. I like when he does that. I like it a lot. But that's kind of what we're in. We're in a very strange time, actually. And we just talked about this 13-year-old and what's going on through his parents' mind, letting kids do that, as they've drank the scientific, in quotes,
yeah, didn't Kool-Aid. Do the research.
No, and that's the problem. That's why I call this a scientific dystopia, because we're not actually in a utopia where I believe we have the scientific and technical knew that we could be, mm-hmm. had these things be, you know, had science been directed in appropriate ways, I think we'd be very well off. However, what's happening is people are being trained to believe and trust experts who are trained, how do I say this? They've smoked the reefer of higher education.
Okay.
And are high on it, and they don't know how to think outside of that. And so what you have is blind trust, blind unthinking trust in scientific establishments that are leading us in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody who goes to higher education has to smoke the reefer of higher ed. Those very few who managed to escape unharmed are the ones who didn't inhale.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And there okay. are a couple of them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I was like, I'll start with a relatively, I mean, it's not too long, quote by a guy named Peter Duisberg. And Peter Duisberg was a virologist at Berkeley for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote a book in the mid-90s called Inventing the AIDS Virus. Inventing the AIDS Virus. And what he's describing here is in the 90s already, mm-hmm. what you had with HIV was an announcement that was made mm-hmm. from the National Institute of Health.
Mm-hmm.
And Fauci was big time involved in that as well. And then you had immediately 100,000 researchers across the globe inventing or investigating AIDS as if it has to be discovered by HIV or caused by HIV.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't look for any other potential cause of autoimmune sure. deficiency syndrome besides this virus, right? Again, that's not free thought. That's not free thinking.
Right.
That's keeping a very controlled and bottled definition of what science should be, right? And here's how he described the scientific establishment. He says, the new science establishment was modeled after the Manhattan Project's team-based investigation priority. So Manhattan Project was inventing the nuclear weapons, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
The H-bombs.
Yep.
Priorities, therefore, focused on the practical results of science, an appropriate goal for the engineering and technology-oriented research that first dominated the new federal spending programs. But recognizing that technology is the applied form of fundamental science, the government soon began throwing money at basic research as well, and thus transformed it into a bureaucracy. Creative geniuses were swept aside to make way for skilled administrators who led large teams of specialized technicians whose only strength was gathering ever larger quantities of raw data. Where nonconformist individuals were who once competed with only a handful of peers, they now faced opposition from tens of thousands of irritated colleagues, a crowd that could more easily drown out minority viewpoints. Experiments replaced contemplative thought and analysis, while research became dazzlingly high-tech and incredibly expensive. And let me tell you, he wrote that in the mid-90s, and it is worse now. It is much, much worse. I've been thinking about this problem for a really long time, and that's such a succinct way of saying this, because it really is. You have a council of people at the NIH who distribute all this granting money, which results in absolutely no advancement in science whatsoever. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at how many cures do we have? Are people getting healthier?
Mm-hmm.
It's the more money they pump into things like obesity, like cancer, the more it goes up, the more these, the incidence of these things are occurring, mm-hmm. right? So how do we solve that? Well, it's not by pumping more money into it. It's like the stupidest functional fixedness I've ever seen in my life, but it's systemic. It's global. Mm-hmm. It's a global issue.
So the guy that wrote this, is he pretty well known? Because I know people in your position, actually, that said they won't ever even hire anybody that went to UC Berkeley. But yeah. I just want to tell you, I happened to visit the campus of UC Berkeley back in like 1987, around there. Mm-hmm. First college campus I've ever walked on or been on where people are walking around down the sidewalks stark naked.
Yeah.
Oh, they had a backpack.
Yeah.
And I go to my friends that were Californians. I go, what's the deal there? They go, oh, just UC Berkeley. That's what they do. Yeah. They walk around naked. But I'm just wondering.
Yeah, I picked the wrong school.
Yeah, right. Well, he was certainly. And you can see this is the good aspect of Berkeley, where mm-hmm. it's free thought, mm-hmm. you know, right, which it used to right. be for, like sure. open thinking.
And that's what I think about when I think of UC Berkeley.
Right, yeah. right. But those people who walk around naked are taking it way too far, obviously. I mean, it has become absolute airheads now, right?
Yeah. Unless you look like me, then you will get your studies done, because if you're walking around naked, people are going to leave you alone.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. But then even for this book too, a little known guy named Kerry Mullis wrote the intro to it, the foreword to it, right? He's the guy who invented the PCR.
Because mm-hmm.
what happened there is Kerry Mullis just invented this PCR. He won the Nobel Prize for it.
Sure.
Therefore, all scientific doors in the world are open to you. And he got paid a lot of money to work on HIV virus and to try and use his PCR kit to detect this HIV sure. virus.
Sure.
Right? And he said the first thing you do when you write a paper is you write the first sentence, and being a scientist, you're supposed to cite it. So if people want to find that information, they can go look it up. And so he says, I wrote, HIV causes AIDS. And then he said, I went and looked for a citation, a reference, studies. Where is it? And he couldn't find it. He couldn't find it whatsoever. And he would go around the globe and talk to all these people, Nobel laureates like Montaigne, who discovered HIV, and said, where's the evidence that HIV causes AIDS? And what happened is they ostracized him, just like what happened to Peter Duisberg, I'm sure, after this, is they ostracized him.
Yeah.
You know? And a guy that invented a PCR, which is a game-changing sure. molecular biological technique, mm-hmm. being ostracized is a big deal.
Yeah.
And people should listen to something like that and their little alarm bell should go off and say, hey, maybe we should let this man speak, you know? And maybe there's a problem with science in this world, even in the 90s, right? And so it's much, 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 much worse now with COVID.
And the part of the quote that really stuck out to me, Dan, was... experience could replace contemplative thought and analysis.
Experiments is what it
experiment.
Is. Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Experiments. Yep. Right. Okay, good. So that, so, and you could also slide in there the word experts.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So you have anybody saying something, and it doesn't require contemplative thought or
yep.
analysis.
Yep.
And the people that are being the most vilified today are the ones who are engaging in contemplative thought and analysis.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if they're doctors or scientists or lawyers or whoever it is. That doesn't matter. You're not allowed to think. Listen to what the experts say. Listen to what they say.
Yep.
And that's it. There was a, who was it who wrote that that there was a plan to take over the world, to take over the minds of the population of the world by getting them to recognize that you just listen to the experts.
Yeah, it was Bertrand Russell.
Mr. Yep. Bertrand Russell.
Yep. Right. Lord Bertrand Russell, actually. He was knighted.
He was knighted. Yes. And that's exactly where we find ourselves today, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So I know that there are people that listen to this show. Tell me, John, would I be incorrect in saying that not everybody who tunes in at 11 o'clock on Tuesday morning, or 11:11, I think as it was this morning, thinks, oh, great, David Waterman and Dan Stanislavski are back. Not everybody does that, do they?
Okay, to be honest, I had one from Canada say something one time, and I kind of set him straight. And then we did have a comment from somebody last week, and that's when we kind of came across and said, look, you know, if you don't agree with the Midwest Public Health Coalition and what they're saying and what they're trying to say, I mean, we've got other days of the week. You know, come on the show, or come on in when you guys are here. That would make it really interesting.
Love that.
We might even bring extra Bush latte for that one. But you know what? If you people, if you want to keep,
I can kind of answer this in a way that I've seen it over, you know, the social media platforms, because that's kind of what I do. You don't see people having podcasts and talk shows and everything talking about all of the positives of everything that's going on. Mm-hmm. But there is a whole bunch of them talking about the corruption that's going on. One of the ones I saw just recently that was really profound was a guy that was talking about the vaccine companies and how they make a bunch of money off the vaccines, but they make even more money off of the results of what those vaccines can do. So if you give a vaccine and it gives ADHD, well, now they have the prolonged solutions to ADHD, the medications
that
you have to keep taking over the years.
The rest of your life.
Yeah, yeah. And so they give you this vaccine, and now they're making billions off of that.
Well, so they make $3 or $4 billion selling the vaccines which cause the problem, and then they make $40 or $50 billion solving the problem that the vaccines caused.
Yes, exactly.
Was that Dr. Brett Weinstein who?
I can't remember who it was. He had kind of like a raspy, like his voice. He would like lose his voice.
Oh no, that's Robert Kennedy Jr.
Oh sure, right. Yeah,
very sharp guy. You know,
you guys notice my wardrobe change too.
He's very nice. Yes,
that's a Tacho Man.
Tacho Man, some love.
Yeah, he is my favorite Kennedy, actually.
Oh yeah, yeah,
He's on board. He's figured it out, and he knows the deal. You know, his story is very interesting. He used to be, a big big global, you know, tree hugger type, save the planet kind of guy, and I think well meaning. And some women started showing up to his rallies and to his speeches, wanting to talk with him, and he didn't have time for any of them. And they said, "You got to look at this stuff on vaccines." And get out of here, you bunch of wacko conspiracy theorists. And finally, one woman showed up at his house with a sack of documents and said, I'm not leaving until you read these. And he, to his credit, he sat down and said, okay. I mean, the guy's a lawyer.
Yep.
He started reading, and his eyes got opened up a little bit, and then he read more, and he, at some point, now that's like his that's his big deal, because he knows the truth. And so that brings us to a point about what the quote, was it Peter, what was his name?
Duisberg.
Peter Duisberg, saying experiments could replace contemplative thought. Now, how does that, just before I make this point, how does that play out in the real world in the scientific community?
It's called publish or perish.
Publish or perish.
And that was one of the crazy things from the institution I left a few months ago, is that at the end of the year meetings, they would be like, we had 2.2 publications per scientist this year. We're doing so awesome, you know, but how does that translate into helping people? Mm-hmm. You know, it's 2.2 publications per scientist that no one's going to freaking read.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like no one cares about. It's not going to advance anything, you know? And they were doing like some asinine projects on like obesity on like the fatty acid content of seaweed. Like that's going to cure obesity. Like come on, people, you know,
as opposed to saying eat less sugar.
Yeah.
Lower your simple carbohydrates in your diet. Figure out the difference between simple carbohydrates and complex carbohydrates and start getting rid of the sugary pasta things that don't do you anything except make you fat.
Yep. How about eat a carrot and get off your ass?
There you go.
Sorry, I'm a little bit more blunt.
but here's the point. I noticed this 30 years ago when I was actually, maybe it was longer ago than that. I couldn't have been because I was not just a kid. When I was in radio, I noticed this phenomenon that if somebody had written a book, that automatically made them an expert.
Yeah.
Right? And if it was a best-selling book, then it's just hands off. No, this guy knows exactly what he's talking about. He's the guy, he wrote the best. But there have been a lot of best-selling books that were total garbage.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Mm-hmm. You are.
Okay. But today we have with us on the show, our guest is best-selling author, Dr. Dan. As soon as you say that, best-selling author, all of a sudden he's revered. Mm-hmm. And whatever he has to say matters more than somebody that maybe knows a lot more than he does. Mm-hmm. And so one of the problems is, and the reason that I asked you if there were detractors for having us come on the show, is because I know for a fact that there are people that work just up the block at the hospital, I can say all true, who hate what we're doing.
Sure.
I know there are.
Mm-hmm.
And they would say that what we're saying is not true, that it's unfounded, it's conspiracy theory nonsense. But those are folks who are I believe that they've become incapable of contemplative thought and analysis.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, wouldn't they come here and prove it?
Yeah, they'd say, well, I don't have time for that.
Absolutely.
Well, of course
I don't have
not.
Time for that.
Nope, you'll just keep saying we're full of BS.
So the issue is this. I'll be honest. I think I probably said this before. I do not want to be doing this.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't.
No?
I've got much more fun things to do than be continually reading and researching all the harm that this... It's not overreach. It's not an overreaction. It's an intentional plan to subvert our liberties and our Constitution, to take over the medical institutions through the CDC and the WHO, and to monetize them for the sake of big pharma. Well, that's a bunch of baloney. That's just not true. Well, you know what? Show me that it's not true, because all the evidence that I see points exactly in that direction. It all points in that direction. Mm-hmm. And to say that somehow the CDC has not been captured by big pharma, you know, capture so if you're a regulatory agency, let's say that I'm making tin cans. Okay. That's what I do. I make tin cans. I've got a big tin can factory. And we have a certain amount of, because we melt the metal down before we shape it into a can. And so we've got a bunch of different toxic things that are produced in the process. And so you are part of the tin can regulation board, whose job is to make sure that we don't pollute too much and that we properly exercise, you know, control over how we deal with the pollutants that we produce. And that we're not affecting the local townspeople and the water and the fisheries and all those kinds of things. And if we're able to, through giving you funding and providing special programs for your agency, at some point we can capture your agency's ability to push back against the bad things that we're doing. And then you don't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody who's listening or watching thinks that I'm making that up, that's a fantasy land, no, that's reality. That happens every day. That happens all over the place in America.
Absolutely. And it has for a long time, too.
And around the world.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, David, I don't know how long you've been coming on here now. It seems like, gosh, like we're pushing a year.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Probably
but,
are.
You know,
we are, right.
It started as basically a show about COVID, coronavirus, and all that stuff.
But masks,
it's kind of funny how it has morphed into something more. And you hit it good there when you said that. It's more than that, because look what it's doing to the whole country. I mean, it's not just about COVID or vaccines or masks anymore.
No, it's not. And I would say, John, that it really never was.
Mm-hmm.
Those were just the peripheral issues. Mm-hmm. Those are the bright, shiny objects that we're supposed to be watching while the bad stuff is happening behind the curtain. And a growing number of people, including doctors and scientists, who 6 months ago would have said that I was nuts and that Dan was nuts. No, that's not happening. Some of those same folks who are still capable of independent thought and reason and analysis are saying, you know, there's something. There's a guy, Dr. Brett Weinstein, who is an evolutionary biologist. I think he's probably an atheist, but other than that, a very smart guy. He's got a podcast called, I think it's called the Dark Horse Podcast, something like that. And he himself has said, you know, something is going on here. Something is not right. What we're seeing does not add up. The medical interventions that are associated with COVID-19 make no sense. Dr. Weinstein is a 100% enthusiastic vaccinator, right? He totally believes in vaccines. He's said that he is enthusiastic about vaccines. He said he doesn't even hate this vaccine, but he is alarmed and shocked at the way that this vaccine was rolled out and the way that it's being pushed on the public with no clinical trial, no animal trials. No, they did do a trial. Yeah, 2 months, that's nothing.
No, that's nothing.
For a vaccine that's untested, the inventor of the mRNA vaccine is saying, I don't think this is going the way it's supposed to. Robert Malone. This isn't quite what I had in mind. We should be looking at things. Information that should be being gathered by the people who are getting the injection so that they can make an analysis of efficacy and safety. That information is not being gathered. And scientists and doctors who recognize that that's supposed to happen and is not happening are saying, wait a minute, why is this not happening? Why are we not gathering that information? See, that it's not oversight. It's not, we were in such a hurry to stop all the bodies from piling up out in the streets that we couldn't prepare that. We just have to vaccinate everybody. That's nonsense. And real doctors who are paying attention and real scientists who are paying attention, they know that that's nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And so we step back and we say, you know, what could be going on here? What evidence is there that there is something actually rather nefarious that's happening, not just in the United States, but around the world? Is there any evidence? Are there any groups? Are there other activities going on that link to COVID-19 that we would say, you know, we don't want those things happening in our world, much less the United States? And we've found that that is true. Now, there's a whole spectrum of people who are willing to sound an alarm about some terrible thing going on, right? There's a kid that walks past a house and smells smoke and says, hey, that house is on fire. And then there's the person that walks past, smells smoke, sees some smoke, and approaches the house, looks in one of the windows, and sees fire licking at the drapes on the inside of the house, and runs out and says, that house is on fire. Then there are professionals who will see the smoke, smell the smoke, come up, see the and they'll say, you know, let's get some instruments out here and take some measurements and let's do an evaluation. And they will do that for hours. And as the structure begins to burn and collapse, at some point they will reach a conclusion. And I'm not mocking them, by the way. That's not my intention. At some point they'll say, you know what? We can verify absolutely 100% without a doubt that house is indeed on fire.
Mm-hmm.
But if you wait for those guys to show up, there's no hope of saving any part of the house or anybody that's inside, right? Because it's going to be too late by the time they verify 100%. And you say, wait a minute, what about the guy that looked in the window and said the house is on fire because he saw the drapes burning? Well, you know, we don't know who lives in that house. We don't know what they did. They could have set up an elaborate system with a projector and had footage, had, you know, videotape footage of drapes burning and been projecting that on a rear screen that made it look like there was, in fact, maybe they were doing a movie inside there and that was just part of the special effects. We didn't know that. I mean, just looking in, you smell the smoke, you see the flames, but it could have been something else. And we wanted to be absolutely sure. There's a time and a place for being absolutely sure.
Yep.
But it's not when people are dying.
Right.
It's not when people's lives and careers and businesses are being destroyed the way they have been in the United States and around the world for the last year and a half.
Well, my question on that, too, is because, you know, with the this whole rollout of pushing these vaccines, and I mean, you said it yourself, too, you know, you probably wouldn't take it except the fact that you want to travel. So, again, it's an incentive to take it to be able to have coercion. Some type of coercion. Yeah. But even now, I mean, I know that we're in North Dakota, you know, we're not in New York, but do you see people that are, you know, that body count that just keeps going up and up and up on the TV? And if that's not the case, then what's the big push now? Why? What is the big push to have everybody do this if it's not even that big a deal?
Unless it's something else.
Right.
Right? Unless it's not about the virus. And maybe it's not even about making billions of dollars of additional revenue for big pharma. Maybe they're just the middlemen. Maybe they're just the means to the end.
You know, and it's something that Dan had brought up at the end of the last show that we never got to talk about that I was really curious about. You'd mentioned something about, I don't know if it was abortions or something that had to do with the vaccine itself. So if you can give some insight into that today, I would be really curious as to what you were going to say that you didn't get to say.
Absolutely.
And he'll do that. But in the meantime, John has to make an announcement. I just want to clarify my point, if I may. The point of saying all of that is that the kid who walks by the house and says, that house is on fire because he smells smoke and that's it. Could be a fireplace. He doesn't know. That's akin to the conspiracy theorist who jumps off at the drop of a hat and starts saying stuff without any evidence, without any proof, just based on an idea. Or, well, I know there are bad guys in the world, and they must be some of them. Well, you're probably wrong. Okay, you're probably wrong. The guy that actually smells the smoke, walks up, looks in the window, and sees that, maybe puts his hand on the door and feels the heat. Well, maybe the sun is beating down on the door before the clouds came, and that's why it's hot. Those guys, I think, have a pretty good idea that what they're seeing is a house on fire. And we don't need to wait for the experts to show up with all their fancy equipment and do the analysis and, you know, a time lapse. So we don't have to do that. We can say, no, the house is on fire. And the problem is with COVID-19, the folks who are doing that kind of observation and analysis are immediately being lumped into the group who just smells smoke and says the house is on fire. So these are the conspiracy theorists. We're not conspiracy theorists. That's not what we do. We do facts and science and evidence, and that's what we come to present on the show and in the presentations that we do, like the one we're doing tonight at 6:30 at Culver's.
And we will talk about that in just a couple of minutes. This might be a bad analogy, but we were talking, Dr. Dan, about research, the vaccine, and not tried, not tested, none of that stuff. It's actually reading an article about a guy who makes fishing lures. And he said it usually takes 2 to 3 years of tests and trial before he'll put these very expensive $5 lures on the market. So there you go. It might not be the right analogy, but I want to talk about Oh for Heaven's Cakes right here in the Grand Cities Mall. They're right on the north backside. Best cupcakes and cakes, hands down, anywhere you're going to get. You can get it by order, or you can walk in to find out more. While you're there, not only will you probably walk out with a lot more than you wanted to, but you can enjoy homemade lunch and soup with keto, gluten-free, and diabetic options. If you're a business owner, you know what? Your employees work hard. Give them a little treat from Oh for Heaven's Cakes, all right? They've got the monthly employee discounts. Again, north backside of the Grand Cities Mall, open Tuesday through Friday from 10 to 4, Saturdays 9 to noon. Call 701-757-CAKE. That's 701-757-2253. Or check them out at overheavenscakes@yahoo.com. And I love this line. Be a beautiful cupcake in a world full of muffins. Oh for Heaven's Cakes in the Grand Cities Mall. And they are back, David Waterman and Dr. Dan Stanislawski from the Midwest Public Health Coalition. our scientific dystopia, COVID-19.
And I wanted to give Dr. Stanislavski an opportunity to address the Paul's question about the spontaneous abortions associated. Is that what you were going to talk about?
Oh, sure. There is a lot I could feed off of what you're saying there, though, yes, especially because there's a lot of aspects of it apply to our current scientific dystopia, and how, in particular, how you have the experts there to come and analyze and pick everything apart, right? Mm-hmm. Again, that's people are trained to follow the modern day priests, which are the white lab coats. You know, mm-hmm. they put them on and they dissect everything. And they're like, okay, we now know what this is called. This is called autism. And we have this drug. And so it's taken care of. You know, it's fine. We got it. We got it under control. Don't worry about it. Look the other way. Right. And so I say that science isn't done in public. Science is not accomplished in public. Public institutions, no, doesn't happen, period. Science is, however, done to the public. It's done to us. It is inflicted, actually. Mm-hmm. It is inflicted upon us. Right. And I'll just give a simple example, because behavioral sciences are sciences and psychology. And I'll give you the example of one Tucker Carlson, who says a lot of things I agree with,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
Admittedly, right? But what happens is they put him on your TV set, and he says things that people agree with. And so what happens is people look at it and they say, oh, Tucker's saying this stuff. All right, so I don't have to do anything. I'll just tune in tomorrow. I'll watch it again. Mm-hmm. And he'll say something else. I'm like, oh, I'll just keep watching because Tucker's doing it. Tucker's going to handle this, right? They understand human behavior and human psychology so well that they know that they put that on there. And millions, I think he has the highest rated cable news program of all of them, right? And so they know that they're going to get millions of people that are going to watch this guy night in and night out and not do anything because they have him sitting there saying the truth.
So just watching him is cathartic for these people.
Exactly. And instead of these guys getting off the couch and going out and changing things in the real world and solving the issue, they have them controlled.
Sure.
Sitting there.
Exactly right. And that's I think that I made a similar point, I think the exact same point when I talked a few weeks ago about the effect of Rush Limbaugh on the public. And he gets all fired up about what's going on and people hear that. Good. Yeah, Rush is there. He's going to save us. But no, they're not. And that is exactly the reason that Midwest Public Health Coalition exists, because we want to educate the public, not so that they can go, oh, good, Midwest Public Health Coalition is doing this. No, we can't. All we can do is educate enough people that are then willing to stand up for what's right and to take a stand that we're not going to go along with this anymore. Because the bottom line is this: if someone wants to destroy your life, if somebody wants to put you in a prison, wants to enslave you, and you fight back, they're going to move on and look for somebody a little bit easier to handle. But if they say to you, hey, come on over here, have a seat here on this nice comfy chair. Well, it doesn't look comfy. Well, it is, just to have a seat here. What are those straps on the arms of the chair for? Nothing. Pay no attention to the straps. They're just decorations. And then you sit down and then they start putting the strap. Well, why are you putting those on my arm? Well, because we're in an earthquake zone, and if there's a tremor, you might go flying off and hurt yourself. So this is to protect you. Oh, okay, gee whiz. Yeah, make sure that's on nice and tight. That sounds so ludicrous, but that's in fact exactly what has been happening to the people of the United States of America.
No, they're doing it
over the last year and a half.
They're doing it in a sales tactic. I mean, instead of that, you know, somebody sees the straps on there, and they say, well, I don't want to wear those straps. And you say, well, what if I told you that those straps could make you feel more comfortable? Would you wear them then? Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, I would. Okay, well, then put on the straps.
That's exactly right. And that's the indoctrination that's been happening for a very, very long time. That's Aldous Huxley, Brave New World stuff, where they have tricked us into putting the straps on ourselves, being like, oh, this is awesome.
Yeah, right? But once they're on, they don't let you take them off.
Right.
And that's the problem. Okay, there are different kinds of bondage, different kinds of slavery. What is the worst? I'm going to just challenge our whole crew here. What is the worst kind of slavery? What is the worst kind of slavery in the world?
I would say sex.
Okay.
Sex slave. You know what I mean?
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, right, right, right. Okay.
Oh, you went the whole rubber suit on us. That was kind of weird.
I agree with you from a from that standpoint, mm-hmm. from a physical, fleshly standpoint.
I didn't mean it, and, you know, I just...
No. I hear what you're saying. No, that's absolutely true, especially if it involves...
younger kids.
Anybody, but especially with children, mm-hmm. right? Hideous.
Yes.
But really, the worst kind of slavery that exists is the slavery of the mind.
Yeah.
Once your mind has been captured and you're controlled by your handlers... That happens, by the way, in almost all forms of slavery, even sex slavery. You can get to the point where these people who are nothing more than objects of profit for their handlers can be allowed. They don't have to be put on a leash. They don't have to be locked up. They can be allowed to run around because they have been so manipulated intellectually and emotionally that they will not run off on their own. They won't escape. They will say they believe that their captors are actually their protectors and that they're going to provide for them. And that's a hideous, hideous place. They're difficult to rescue. The same thing happens with some cults.
Cults, yeah.
People get involved in the cult and they don't realize. And so they're, yeah, go sell these flowers on the streets to raise money for the church.
Mm-hmm.
Unification Church was like that. Sun Myung Moon was an expert at brainwashing people and then setting them off to do their bidding. But we think that that doesn't happen anymore. It does happen. And it's happening with COVID-19. There are people who are still wearing masks. They have been completely demoralized and convinced that they have to do that because the air is toxic. You know, and they might die if they take it off, in spite of the fact that there's no evidence whatsoever to back up that belief. They believe it. It's just what they believe.
You know, so on a show that we did yesterday, a guy brought up a point that I'd never heard of before, and it was pretty scary, talking about the mental issues that children will have when they are told that they can take off the mask.
Yes.
Because the kids are, they've been so conditioned to wear them now that when they tell them that they can take them off, they're going to be like, well, I don't think I can. I mean, that's not how what's going to happen to me.
Yeah, imagine another year, that's, 2 years, 3 years of that.
Exactly.
Kids.
That is slavery of the mind. Yeah. They have been captured and captivated. And that's exactly what some people want. And nobody in this room, but that's exactly what certain people who are behind this want. Well, who are they?
Well, it's like a dog on a leash. You know, you try to release them into the wild, don't they? They're like, I won't put the leash back on.
Yeah, exactly. I think the most domesticated species on planet Earth is the human being, right? Because we have stopped thinking for ourselves. Freedom of thought is stamped out of us through the education system, the education to work slave wage system that we live in, that we're trained in, right? And so they don't want people that think outside the box. And in particular, that quote I read, especially in the scientific community, they don't want that, even though that's the only thing that will ever advance science, by the way, right? Is the people that question the dogmas and can see and connect disparate ideas that people hadn't seen a connection there before. And what happens is when another point of our scientific dystopia here is that they dole out granting through councils. So you'll submit a grant to the NIH, NSF or something, and then they'll have peers read it. Dozens of peers read these things and score them, right? But if you have an idea that's truly revolutionary that no one's ever heard of, first of all these people's jobs are potentially in threat, right? Because their job might go bye-bye because, hey, this thing's going to revolutionize how science is done, you know? So A, that's if they can recognize the power of it, but B, most likely they won't recognize the power of it and they'll think that's kooky, so they'll say, get out of here. Right, and so that's another aspect. But we're so far along in this dystopia that they could inflict COVID upon us, and people would fall for the bait, right? Because this didn't come out of nowhere, right? This came after a massive decline in the cognitive abilities of Americans and the quality of their training, right? And so, like for example, for especially the leftists that are there that are now called Democrats, all they have to do is put the fear on TV for them. That's it. That's all they had to do is fear day one, right? There's a ton of science behind there, right? Because especially when they have the death tickers going by every night, what they're doing is they're recapitulating 9/11 style events every single day in people's minds. And we all know what happened at 9/11 and how we all got, kill them, you know, right away. Boom, yeah. Buildings come down. Let's get them. Go to war. Do it. all of America. I was, you know, 16 something at the time. I was on board, you know, let's do this, you know. But that's how easy it is to control. Then you just put your expert there, and as people are in that fearful state, they're far more likely to follow the expert advice, the expert analysis. So they supply the response to it, and they say, don't worry, we got you covered. Just stay in your house, and let's destroy the world as we know it, but it'll be worth it because you won't die from a cold.
Which is basic. That's terrorist theory.
Absolutely.
In practice, that's exactly how it works.
You can talk about the old abortion thing or not.
We've talked about how dangerous the shots are. In fact, I was thinking, so we have our Culver's event tonight, and my talk has been called What They're Not Telling You About the Vaccine, in quotations. But I was thinking of making a subtitle saying the COVID vaccinations, : biological evidence of crimes against humanity. I mean, that's how obvious it should be to people. They are assaulting us physically and certainly violating informed consent left and right.
And if I could just at this moment, before you continue, Dan, if someone is listening right now who thinks that we're wrong, who thinks that we don't know what we're talking about, please show up tonight at Culver's at 6:30 and bring proof that what we're saying is not true. Mm-hmm. Bring some reasonable evidence that what Dr. Stanislavski is going to be presenting tonight isn't really true. That all the research that he's done is false and meaningless. Because I'd like to see it. I'm very confident that everything that's going to be presented tonight is not only true, but in some cases, no offense, it's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, this deception that's being used, that's using COVID-19 as the mask, as the as the face, the facade, to fool people into becoming mentally and emotionally enslaved to the deception, is so much more perverse and evil, and it is provable worldwide. But a lot of people don't see it the way that we do. They believe what they're told by the experts, by the people on TV, and the Faucis of the world. Let's hope there's only one. And they just go along with it. They cannot reason this out for themselves, even though they say, yeah, see, all this stuff doesn't make any sense.
Can I hear about the abortions now?
But they just go along for it. So I would encourage anybody, yeah, please come, and we're going to have a Q&A afterwards, question and answer. You can talk to Dr. Stanislavski. Dr. Gullix is going to be there. I'll be there. And bring contradictory information and show where we got our facts wrong.
And I'm going to tell you that right now, if you do go to Culver's tonight, and we will talk about this too before we leave, but you better have your facts. You better have your information, because I know you guys have all that stuff. Yes. You know, and the same thing goes, not only show up at Culver's tonight, but do your research if you've done any. And if you want to come on and argue with us about any of these, or not argue, debate is probably the right word. Mm-hmm. Feel free to text us again, 701-213-0863. You can go to local@gfbestsource.com if you want to email us. But, you know, I've had people in the last couple of weeks say, nah, you know what, it's just a bunch of crap, I don't believe it. Well, come and prove us wrong.
And I do want to make this one disclaimer. The one thing we will accept dissenting positions, of course, and we would like to see the science and the evidence behind those positions. One thing I will not entertain, even for a moment, is, well, the CDC says, sorry, that's a non-starter for that discussion. That is not going to happen. Well, the WHO, well, the Mayo Clinic says this. That's a non-starter. We're not going to go there, okay? You bring real information. Don't bring, well, my mommy told me this is the way it is. Well, no, bring facts, okay? And we'll be happy to look at them and discuss them. Okay, sure. On to abortion.
So, New England Journal of Medicine, the study is called Preliminary Findings of mRNA COVID-19 Vaccine Safety in Pregnant Persons. And so what this is they did, like, they took the statistics from VAERS and VSAFE and all these things for pregnant women. And in this, they had 827 pregnancies that went to full term. and of which 13.9% resulted in a pregnancy loss, which is apparently about normal, and 712 went to completion, so live birth. However, of the what was it? Sorry, 115 spontaneous abortions, 92.3% of them occurred when the woman received the vaccine within the first trimester of birth. 92.3. In fact, in the discussion, they say, we were unable to evaluate adverse outcomes that might occur in association with exposures earlier in pregnancy exposure to the shot, such as congenital anomalies, because no pregnant persons who were vaccinated early in pregnancy have had live births captured in VSafe. So no, anyone who was vaccinated early in pregnancy, their pregnancy didn't complete properly.
Wow.
Right.
Wow.
Scary. So they, you know, when you say pregnant persons,
right,
that's the politically correct way now.
Sorry, because it is. I read that they say that's all they say.
That's what this world is coming to. I mean, normally it'd be pregnant women.
It's incredible. Can I see that for just 1 second? Because I do want to point something out.
That study said that 92% of women that took the vaccine, well, they were pregnant.
No. 92.3 that were pregnant during the first trimester.
Okay.
If they got the shot during the first trimester, not a single pregnancy completed properly.
Wow.
93%.
So it's 92.3% of all spontaneous abortions that occurred during the study occurred from people having the shot in the first trimester.
Wow. So 9 out of 10, basically.
Right. That's huge.
Yeah, that's very huge.
Yeah, and that's just what they published, because there's a little letter to the editor as well about that, about a correction that should be in there.
And this is published in the National Enquirer.
Yeah, right?
No, I'm sorry. New England Journal of Medicine.
Inquiring minds want to know.
New England Journal of Medicine. I just wanted to read this, just for this one little thing, because they can't even stick to their own politically correct nonsense. Because every once in a while, their rational brain kicks in as they're writing, and they don't realize it. So they say, they say this, in a total of 35,691 VSafe participants, 16 to 54 years of age, identified as pregnant, injection site pain was reported more frequently among, listen to the terms, pregnant persons than among non-pregnant women. Whereas headaches might, whoops, oh, what did you just say? I guess you can say non-pregnant women, but if you're going to say pregnant, you got to say persons, because anybody could get pregnant, right?
Apparently.
Scientific dystopia.
Every once in a while, And here about later on, they say outcomes of persons vaccinated against COVID-19 who had a completed pregnancy were similar to incidences reported in studies involving pregnant women that were conducted before the COVID-19 pandemic. Oops. Yep. They didn't have a very good checker. Editor on that, but so they the most of the time it says pregnant persons.
They didn't have the good fact checkers like Facebook and YouTube has. Right.
But every once in a while they slip up and say it the right way and say pregnant or non-pregnant women.
Mm-hmm. So in the letter to the editor, where they suggested a necessary correction, was looking at the total spontaneous abortions that occurred less than 20 weeks of pregnancy. And in this, the authors of the study reported a 12.6% spontaneous abortion rate. However, they included 700 participants that received the dose in the third trimester, which is after 20 weeks, right? So the actual total should be 82%, the total spontaneous abortion percentage pre 20 weeks of receiving the shot. And I know people too that have worked in the hospital where they witnessed. In this city, a birth at 36 weeks that the child was not alive, and the placenta had tons of blood clots in it.
Oh boy.
And the mother had the shot, right? I don't know when. So this is, I mean, what do you make of this? It's a sterilization. It's a eugenical weapon.
We're injecting women, even pregnant women, with something that may or may not prevent a disease that has a 99.997% survival rate.
Yeah.
And the survival rate of those babies.
I really think we should have led the podcast today with this one.
Well, play it in reverse.
Yeah. You know, I actually did, a lady came up to me, at our mayor's, back to badge ride. And she told me how much she liked these Tuesday shows. And I said, well, what's the deal? And she said, well, here's the thing. I'm a mother. I want to have more kids. And I will not get vaccinated because I still want to have more kids. And she just left it at that.
And that's a great, I think any reason not to take the shot is a good reason at this point, because I can't see, other than doing a clinical trial, saying we're doing an experiment, would you like to be part of it? If someone wants to be part of an experiment, let them be part of an experiment. But to be saying you can't travel unless you take this shot, you can't leave the country unless you take this shot, you can't shop, you can't work here unless you take the shot. The amount of coercion that's going on surrounding this untested medical device is unprecedented in our country. Yeah. It violates the Nuremberg Code 1,000 times over.
And I actually disagree with Paul, because this spontaneous abortion event here is shocking, but it's actually a small symptom of what we're talking about, of the scientific dystopia, because you only get this happening when airhead moms are like, I trust the science. I believe in the science. But this isn't the science, right? Their minds are being scientifically controlled into believing the science, right? And thus you get this and all the autoimmunities and all the hundreds of issues that we've talked about from these shots, right? So these are symptoms of the larger problem, which is the system creating this.
Exactly.
Now, I'll give you that.
And when the 97% pregnancies end in spontaneous abortion after getting the shot during the first trimester, effective, safe and effective, I don't see how that fits in.
No, absolutely not.
How does that fit in? Was that, it sure wasn't safe for the baby, was it?
Right.
But it was effective if you are a eugenicist and if you want to depopulate the world.
Sure.
One baby at a time, yeah. One person at a time.
And I was also going to wade into the magnet question last time, but there's a lot of information coming out on that, and I believe the magnet phenomenon is real. I've seen too many videos and heard personal stories. I have yet to see with my eyes, which would seal the deal for me, but I've been investigating how that could be, and there's actually, however it's happening, it involves them lying to us. Of course, because they're not telling us the exact ingredients in these shots that would cause them to be magnetic. But there's the graphene oxide issue that people are talking about. And I've seen the Spanish-speaking doctors. I haven't fully investigated or understood what their evidence is, but I've looked into the graphene oxide issue, and they certainly can be put into lipid nanoparticles. So it's possible that's causing it. I just haven't seen any smoking gun evidence on that yet. And again, there are other ways they can do it. I think I've also seen papers that looking at the microscopy of what graphene oxide does, and it doesn't line up with what these PhDs are saying. So I haven't formed a full opinion on that, other than I think that it is a real phenomenon. In fact, there was a little kind of quasi study done in Luxembourg where the person conducting the research was just at a mall, and he would just ask, you know, people, hey, have you had your shot? Can you do this little magnet thing? And he wanted to get 100 people that had the shot and 100 not. But he ended up stopping at 30 each, because he said that the people, and Europeans are generally more in tune with their bodies and more health conscious. Mm-hmm. And he said that the people were getting so upset because it was like 29 out of the 30, the magnet stuck. And of that 29, seven of those individuals had to stick to other parts of their body as well. And they had a little EMF detector, and they were giving off a distinct EMF signal. And so these people were kind of like, what the heck have I done to myself type of issue. And the guy who was conducting this research said, I can't deal with it anymore because it's very traumatizing. And so, in short, there's a lot, even more going on with these shots than we know.
And Dr. Stanislavski was, and I will tell you because I was there, he was definitely skeptical at the beginning. So what he's saying now, he believes, but it hasn't formed a full opinion or analysis of, is something that he started off as a skeptic for. And that's one of the reasons that I really appreciate him, because he doesn't just jump on something because it sounds good or because it lines up with our position. And that's something that we're very, very careful about at MedBest Public Health Coalition. Just because we hear something, there's some new item that comes across our desk one way or another, that may line up with the position that we now strongly hold, we don't automatically assume that that's true or that that is even valid evidence until we've had a chance to investigate it to make sure that it's legitimate.
Mm-hmm. Well, you don't want to look stupid.
No, and we don't want to, and because we've got, we have plenty of detractors. We've got a whole North Dakota Department of Health.
Sure.
They would love to see us just go away.
Mm-hmm.
They'd love to see that. The local health officers would love to see that. Most of the doctors at our hospital and clinics would love to see us go away. I believe that. We wrote letters to, I think, 60 of them very early on in this whole thing regarding the efficacy, the safety of masks, whether or not it's actually proper medical protocol to slap masks, these random cloths on people's nose and mouths, especially children, without doing any type of a health assessment first. Is that normal? Is that normally how you would do something? You know how many responses we got back? Zero.
Yeah,
not a single doctor responded to us.
So I was talking to my wife about this yesterday, and I'll disclose it now because, you know, people probably forget by then. But so when my daughter goes back to school, and if they still enforce the mask mandate on children, maybe you guys can help me because I'm going to go to the school board and I'm going to say, why are you making them wear them? If they say, well, it's for the protection of the teachers. And then say, okay, well, show me the stats of, you know, how this is going to protect them. Or if it's to protect the other children. Okay, well, show me the stats of, like, you know, how this is so effective. And they say, okay, now how about violence? Okay, what are the stats of a children committing violent act on a teacher or on other students? And then I'm going to throw a pair of handcuffs on the table. I'm going to say, I want you to require all children to wear these handcuffs to protect the teachers and the other students. And if you don't want to make them wear these handcuffs, then you better well take those damn masks off too.
We will be shoulder to shoulder with you in that one. Absolutely.
Yeah. We do have a couple of texts I want to mention here quick. Paul says, and the CDC wants us to give the COVID vaccine to our young children. Well, let's see what that does to them. Having children later on in life, my grandkids going to come out with 16 legs and half an arm and four heads, or will they not be able to even have kids? Although I may be a bit above and beyond here, prove to me that this isn't going to happen. Jennifer Jean texts in, the North Dakota Department of Health actually hired a North Dakota mommy blogger to promote the jab. So now you don't need any experience, I guess, to promote something like this, because I'm sure the budget, the advertising budget to get the vaccine
it's
is
massive.
Huge.
Billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm. And that's just North Dakota. I mean, think about how much money is being spent nationwide.
And what? And Dr. Rainer Frulemich, who is an attorney in Germany, he also is licensed to practice in California, is in the process of beginning his major lawsuits against people that are promoting the jab as crimes against humanity. He's got over 1,000 attorneys worldwide working with him. And these aren't guys that sit around saying, how can I waste my time this week? Right? These are folks who know how to earn a buck in an hour. Mm-hmm. Okay? And they're working with him. People are, when this is all over, there are going to be people that go to jail. People are going to jail. You can trust me on that. Who they are, how many they are, that remains to be seen.
And to Paul's little point there, it seems, you know, hyperbolic, but it's really, you know, it's not that hyperbolic because these shots can alter your DNA. And I mean, mm-hmm. Again, that was another thing I even stated publicly. I don't think they can.
Right.
And then you look down the rabbit hole a little further. It's like, man,
yes,
it turns out they can, mm-hmm. you know, and what happens there is, a lot of your what of your genetic DNA, what gets turned into functional proteins is about 1.8% of that of all your DNA. And for a number of years, they called the rest of it junk DNA. Junk DNA. That's what we were taught, junk DNA. However, it turns out that's not true at all. It's not even close to true. And it about 33%, 34% of that junk DNA, of our total DNA, really, are these things called lines and signs. And that signs stands for long interspersed nuclear elements and then short interspersed nuclear elements. But what these things do, it's a set of proteins that read RNA, turn it into DNA, cut the DNA, genomic DNA open, and then insert this newly made DNA into your genomic DNA. And then there's a couple studies already that have showed that SARS-CoV-2 proteins the genetic information from SARS-CoV-2 proteins can get incorporated into your DNA and then become expressed. Means your cell, your body will now read that newly incorporated DNA and make those proteins, right? And so these shots can absolutely do that. So Paul is not way out of left field there.
Right. You were talking about the public schools and what you want to do. And the problem with your approach, Paul, is that you're taking a rational approach to them, saying, hey, if you can show me some information that is going to prove that the kids actually spread it to each other, they spread it to the teachers, then, yeah, give me that. They don't have to do that. All they have to do is say, well, the CDC recommends this. We're following their guidance. Because guess what? That's what they've been doing from day one. There is absolutely no contemplative thought or analysis of the situation. Here are the numbers from the CDC. Age and sex updated. This is August of last year when they had all these deaths with COVID, right? And 5 to 14 year olds death. No, let's do 15 to 24 first. Deaths with COVID, not from COVID. 280 of people who died with COVID. Well, at least they thought they had COVID, maybe. Mm-hmm. They didn't even have to have a test. They just, maybe they had a COVID symptom, maybe a sniffly nose, a fever, a shortness of breath. That could have been a bunch of different things. 280 out of a population of 42,970,000. You know how many total deaths there were in that same period of time? This is from February, I think February 2nd up until, no, February 1st, excuse me, up through August 22nd. You know how many deaths in that same population? 18,594. And out of those 18,594, 280 died with COVID. Where's the panic button? Where's the emergency in that? Are you serious? Okay, now let's jump down to 5 to 14 year olds. During that same period from February 1st, 2020 to August 22nd, 2020, out of a population of 41 million children between 5 and 14 years old, mm-hmm. 41 million, there were a total of 2,935 deaths. How many of those deaths were with COVID? 28.
Wow.
That's CDC numbers, folks. Mm-hmm. I'm not mm-hmm. making this up.
Yeah, that's which is a percentage of what? I mean, yeah,
it's a fraction of a percent.
Yeah, a fraction of a percentage.
That's like margin of error statistically.
In other words, it's statistically zero.
Yeah, right, right.
And yet we're going to traumatize children for an entire school year and force them to wear these diapers over their faces. By the way, you know, we had another guy with a PhD on the show a while ago, and he said, well, there's no proof that that caused any harm. And then, no, you can, oh, it's only going to reduce oxygen by a very small percentage, and it's only going to increase carbon dioxide by a very small percentage, except that the Germans did a study just recently, Dr. Dan, when they concluded that the maximum amount of carbon dioxide that a child should be breathing in is what? 2,000
parts per million.
Parts per million. 2,000 parts per million. That, in other words, that's the upper limit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It could certainly be lower than that without harm, but they should not be breathing in more than 2,000 parts per million of carbon dioxide. And Dr. Stanislavski, after they put a mask over the nose and mouth of these children that they were testing, how long did it take for that carbon dioxide level to increase, and what did it increase to within just a couple of minutes?
Yeah, it was it increased to 13,000 for both mask types. I think they had like an N95 style mask and then the surgical mask. And
yes.
And it went to over 13,000 parts per million within 3 minutes. And they said that these kids wear these masks for an average of 270 minutes a day.
Jeez. 270 minutes a day went up to 13,000 parts per million. And they'd already determined that medically, to preserve that child's health, it should not be more than 2,000 parts per million. In other words, in just 3 minutes, they're breathing in 6 times more carbon dioxide
yeah.
than has been deemed healthy for a child to breathe. And they're doing it all day long.
But yep, he says, oh, they haven't proved it. I mean, sounds like the proof is there.
So that's just physical exposure.
Mm-hmm.
What we're going to be talking about tonight, one of the things we're going to be talking about tonight is what can parents do? And it That's a very, very important topic, because I think that there are parents, other than just Paul, who want to make sure that when their children go back to school in the fall, they're going to be able to breathe fresh air. They're going to be able to look and act like normal children. They're not going to be terrified into thinking that they're going to die if they don't wash their hands or wear this stupid thing on their this pathogen collector on their face. And that if they touch one of their friends, that maybe they'll die. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they'll kill grandma or their parents or their teacher. Parents want to know. And some parents, they believe the whole thing. They've bought into all of it, right? Sure. They go through all the ritual with the masking and all that stuff because they believe because the CDC said so, even though the CDC is provably a corrupt medical bureaucracy.
Well, I was just going to say, and I'm saying this in my opinion because I don't want to get in trouble, but one of the results of that also with me showing up with those handcuffs is I'm going to say, well, you know, if this doesn't go through, well, I'm going to have all these extra handcuffs, and don't be surprised if you find yourself in them.
Well, you know, kids are supposed
maybe in the back of my car.
Kids are supposed to be kids. They shouldn't have to worry about this stuff. They shouldn't have to worry about, well, all of a sudden, if I don't wear a mask, am I going to kill grandma? Am I going to make grandpa sick? Kids are supposed to be kids. Let them be kids. Let them go to school. They go to school for one reason, and that is to get an education. They shouldn't have to worry about all this other stuff, because think about it. It's proven. They're showing grades are going down. More kids are failing. You need to go in and you need to focus on school. Not so much, and this is kind of off topic a little bit too, but when you went to school, you know, with the big referendum, the bond thing they had there that failed last week, do you remember how crappy your school building was, or do you remember going to school?
I remember going to school.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's same with me. And I grew up, and when I went to school, the schools were old. I mean, parts of my high school were condemned at that time. A whole floor was condemned. I didn't really remember that. I didn't focus on that. I was there to get my education and eat lunch and play sports.
Yeah.
So let them get back to being kids. I want to touch on this. I know we got another show soon here, but the impact of COVID-19 on children and teenagers and how to protect them tonight at Culver's. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, yeah. So again, we'll have, Dr. Dan Stanislavski and Dr. Gene Gullix. Dr. Stanislavski will be speaking about some of the science behind the injection that they're pushing on younger and younger children all the time. The goal is, I will tell you what the goal is. And I don't know this because I got the secret memo from the bad guys. I don't need their secret memo. I've been watching the behavior of our so-called health officials and other public figures. And what they're doing is they're continually pushing it down. There's downward pressure for lower and lower. The goal is, I will tell you right now, to have no age limits on vaccination for COVID-19. That is their goal. They want no age limits. They want that baby to pop out of the mother's abdomen and inject him right now.
Mm-hmm.
Get that baby injected right now so I don't die from the COVIDs.
Yeah.
Right? And it's not farcical. It's criminal because these injections are deadly. There have been over 6,000 people, according to VAERS, who've died. And by the way, there are reports that VAERS is now being scrubbed of deaths.
Yeah.
They're subtracting deaths. I heard one doctor speak about over 20 people that he knows of personally who died right after, or knows through other medical experts that he knows personally who died immediately after getting the injection, mm-hmm. and they tried to report it to VAERS, and VAERS rejected it.
Yeah.
They rejected the report. So not only are they scrubbing reports that have come in, but they're preventing other reports of death and injury from ever actually making it into their system.
Yeah.
We're talking about criminal behavior. These are absolutely crimes against humanity. And it's, look, if I'm wrong, come and show me.
Right,
come and show me. We're not wrong. We're just one of thousands mm-hmm. of experts around the country and around the world who are seeing what's going on. They're saying, you know what? This is really bad. But when the folks who need to do all the testing and all the science and that, just to make sure, there are going to be a lot of dead people if we wait until they actually finish their complete analysis. We need to look at what's right in front of us and say, it's time to stop. The message of the school board, the message of the superintendent is, no, you're not masking our children. You're not going to terrorize them anymore. You're not going to do that. They're going back to school and it's going to be normal, or you're going to be looking for another job.
Culver's tonight, 6:30.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely free. The impact of COVID-19 on children and teenagers and how to protect them. Of course, Dr. Jean Gullick's been on the show before. Great speaker. She knows her stuff. And, of course, Dr. Dan Stanislawski is going to be speaking. And it's pretty obvious. Dan, you're a pretty smart guy, too. I encourage you to go to this. And even if you don't agree with the Midwest Public Health Coalition, go talk to them about it. Believe me, they're not going to turn this into an argument with you. They will listen to you, and then they will show you. You know, you guys can swap information or do whatever, but exactly. I want to leave the show with one last text from Cheryl. Did you know that usually after 25 deaths, a vaccine or a medicine is pulled? Now, we've had about 6,000 deaths at least. Tylenol was recalled after 7 deaths.
And this vaccine is responsible for more deaths than all the other vaccines leading up to it combined.
Mm-hmm.
All the other vaccine deaths combined.
Yeah.
Don't even touch the deaths from COVID, the COVID-19 vaccine. A vaccine, which I use the term, I use loosely, to inoculate people from a virus that has a survival rate of 99.997%. What? More people, by the way, have died from the vaccine at this point than have died from COVID. Children have a 50 times higher risk of death from the shot than they do from COVID-19.
Yeah. Wow. Next Tuesday, we have a date.
Yes,
we might be a little bit later, but we will inform all of you listeners and people that watch the show. And thank you to everybody that texted and watched today. Again, David Waterman, Dr. Dan Stanislawski from the Midwest Public Health Coalition. Thing going on tonight at Culver's at 6:30, the impact of COVID-19 on children and teenagers and how to protect them. Go check it out. All right. You're going to learn a lot of things. Like we do every single Tuesday here. Hey, special thanks going out to the Bun Lounge and their third annual Pre-Sturgis Party 2021 coming up July 30th and 31st. You can party to free live music Friday night, Sweet Freedom. Saturday, the band back for more. You're going to have awesome food from L&M Meats. The Burnout Table and Stage are there again and so much more. I'm telling you, man, the best party in town. Go to the Bun Lounge's third annual Pre-Sturgis Party Friday, July 30th and Saturday, July 31st. Of course, the Bun Lounge, home of the world famous Shrimp Caesar, open daily until 2 a.m. 1708 Mill Road in Grand Forks. If you want to find out more about this Sturgis party, this pre-Sturgis party, their phone number is 701-772-4366. Tomorrow, we talk with Travis from Brothers Firearms. You know, people are talking about gun shortages, ammunition shortages, silencers, all that stuff. We're going to try to cover it all for you, all right? And thanks for tuning in. And again, make sure you like, share, tag, follow us, and hit that notification bell on your smartphone, too. Man, we all know Grand Forks is a groovy little place. Well, Grand Forks' best source is giving it an identity again.